helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
On the basis of, hacked materials clause at Twitter, decisions were made to censor reporting leading up to the election. My question was, is it the White House view that these decisions were made appropriately in light of what has come out?
Which decisions? By whom?
By Twitter.
By Twitter on, okay. So, look, we see this as an interesting or a coincidence, if I may, that he would so haphazardly, Twitter would so haphazardly push this distraction. That is a full of old news.
The great Oz has spoken.
Oh.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. The great Oz has spoken.
Who are you?
Oh, I am the great and powerful Wizard of Oz.
Does anyone else hear that line from the Wizard of Oz every time someone from the White House tells us to ignore some inconvenient facts simply because they are old news? By the way, the question, which was asked by Jackie Heinrich of Fox, seems to be important. What was the White House's position, seeing it looks like they've been caught with a hand in the cookie jar? And as usual, it's Corinne Jean-Pierre playing the Wizard of Oz saying, don't listen to them, we're the Wizard of Oz. Pay no attention to the bad news coming out of the Twitter files. The line, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, has become a metaphor for pointing out when people have been caught red-handed, lying, cheating, or otherwise acting badly. And boy, does it seem to apply to what we've been learning from the Twitter files. I have previously reviewed the first part of those files released through Matt Taibbi. Since then, the information is becoming fast and furious. As usual, at the Constitution Study, I didn't jump on the new release bandwagon. Rather, I want to take some time today and review what I found with you. So join me as we go in and peruse the rest of the Twitter files. Hello there, Everyday American. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study. I hope you're looking forward to this as much as I have. The Twitter files have been entertaining, they've been enlightening, and they have been all-consuming to, certain parts of the media. But I want to take some time, just as I did with the first part, the first release from Matt Taibbi, and I want to look at these with you release by release and analyze it that way, rather than simply jumping on the bandwagon with everybody else. So let's get started. The second part of the Twitter files came out through Barry Weiss. And for those more politically minded, Barry Weiss is a New York Times editor. So obviously, Elon Musk is not playing partisan politics in his release. So let's take a look at what Ms. Weiss has released to us from these documents. Now, the not surprise of the release is that, Twitter had blacklists. A blacklist really means we're not going to promote or we're not going to allow this content to go on the platform. She used an example of a Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, a professor at Stanford, I believe, and he argued that the COVID lockdowns would actually harm children. And she screenshots a status for his account, which shows him as active, but also shows him to be on the trends blacklist. See, this trends blacklist apparently is designed to prevent tweets from certain people from trending. In other words, they want to suppress this information. Now, of course, he was not the only one. Talk show host Dan Bongino was on the search blacklist. And the account of Charlie Kirk was set to do not amplify. So again, it should be a surprise to no one that Twitter was doing their best to suppress certain information. Now, as I've always said, Twitter is a private company. Yes, they're publicly traded. Well, they were publicly traded, but they were a private company. And they get to decide what they put on their property. I know a lot of people claim that Twitter's the public square, but it is not. And I want to make this point very emphatically because I find it not only unhelpful, I find it actually damaging when we start referring to a private company as the public square. So picture public square. I live near a small town in Middle Tennessee, and we have a town square. Needless to say, it's a four roads in a square. In the center is the county courthouse, and around the perimeter are businesses. Now, the county square refers to that area in the center where the county courthouse is and the area around it. There's some lawns and stuff, and we've held events there. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the public square. The coffee shop, the clothing store, the accountant or the jewelers, those buildings, those properties are not the public square. Now, if you are standing in the public square and you're shouting out to the public, well, you're in the public square. But if I'm standing in the doorway at the coffee shop and I am shouting into the public square, that doesn't mean I'm on the public square. That coffee shop has every right to ask me to leave. And if I do not leave, to have me charged with trespass. Well, digitally, it's the same. Twitter is a private company. It is a business adjacent to the public square. The fact that you can stand there and shout into the public square doesn't make it the public square. In fact, to do so would be a crime because it would be depriving the owners of Twitter, now Elon Musk, of his property without due process of law. See, if we suddenly decide that certain companies are no longer privately owned but controlled by the state to make them the public square, you could even say that's a takings if you're going to use it as a public square. But I always focus on the due process clause mainly because people ignore it. So the fact that Twitter wanted to suppress this information is not a constitutional issue unless it was being done pursuant to a law, rule, regulation, or custom coming from government. Now, that doesn't mean that Twitter is without sin here, that they haven't committed crimes. For example, in 2018, then head of legal policy and trust and the head of Vijay Gad and the head of product, Kayvon Bekpour, said that we do not shadow ban. He said, and we certainly don't shadow ban based on political viewpoints or ideology. Okay, they lied. Then again, if lying was a criminal offense, wouldn't that mean all politicians were criminals? Now, of course, the question of shadow banning is interesting because there's no real definition of shadow ban. It's generally used as we are going to ban or demote certain content without telling the person that we're doing it. Twitter apparently doesn't shadow ban. They have what they call visibility filtering, VF for short. And it's ways of downgrading content within their system. Some of the blacklists we've already talked about. Now, Barry Weiss says that one senior Twitter employee told her that think about visibility filtering as being a way for us to suppress what people see to different levels. It's a very powerful tool. So does it meet the, since you don't really have a definition of shadow banning, it's kind of hard to say they lied. But when they did say that they don't shadow ban based on political viewpoints and ideology, that doesn't pass the smell test. Going on, we find that Twitter had this group. They call it the Site Integrity Policy Escalation Support. Boy, doesn't that sound like corporate America. And these were a bunch of big wigs, right? It's the head of legal, policy and trust, the head of trust and safety, CEOs. They were all part of this group. And there were certain people that got, we'll call them special treatment. They got special looked at by SIP. Now, many of you may have heard of the account Libs of TikTok. I love Libs. I don't follow Libs of TikTok, but every so often they come up in the news, and it's always hilarious because these are basically libs on TikTok telling us just exactly how evil they are, and all this person does is retweet it. They take the stuff from TikTok, they put it up on Twitter, so the people who are not willing to submit themselves to the Communist Party of China can actually find out what these people are thinking. The person's name was Achaya Raichik. She started this back in November of 2020, and it's become a big account as far as I know. Now, libs of TikTok is frequently, well, let's say suspended. They have their account suspended over and over, I think 6 times. And they, why did they do this? Well, because they claim that libs of TikTok violated Twitter's policy against hateful conduct. Well, this group of bigwigs had a memo, an internal memo, back in October of 2022. This is after libs of TikTok's 7th suspension. And what was in that that memo? Well, the site policy recommendation says site policy recommends placing libs of TikTok in a 7-day timeout. What are they, children? They put them in a 7-day timeout at the account level based on the account's continued pattern of indirectly violating Twitter's hateful conduct policy by tweeting content that either leads to or intends to incite harassment against individuals and institutions that support LGBTQ communities. At this time, site policy has not found explicitly violative tweets which would result in a permanent suspension of the account. Oh, in other words, you haven't actually found libs of TikTok violating your policy. They say they indirectly do this because, well, they're telling the world what these libs on TikTok are doing. In fact, in the assessment section, it says, since its most recent timeout, the LTT, Libs of TikTok, has not directly engaged in behavior violative of the hateful conduct policy, the user has continued targeting individuals, allies, supporters of the LGBTQIA+ community for alleged misconduct. Oh, I thought the heads of Twitter said they didn't shadow ban based on someone's political preferences. That's exactly what the memo says that they were doing. So what did this committee of bigwigs do? They suspended her account. They pointed out internally that they were claiming the post encouraged online harassment of, you ready for this, hospital and medical providers. Why? Well, they insinuated that gender-affirming care is equivalent to child abuse. Gender-affirming care is a really Orwellian term, because gender-affirming care means ignoring your gender and pretending that your feelings supersede reality. But when Ms. Raichik was doxxed, when a photo of her home and her address were posted on Twitter, she complained, right? She contacted Twitter support. What did Twitter support say? It goes, thanks for reaching out. We reviewed the reported content and didn't find it to be in violation of the Twitter rules. In this case, no action will be taken at this time. So wait a second. Repeating information that someone posted on another platform, that is hateful. But giving out the home address, a personally identifiable information, is not meant to target people for harassment? Or is it just because maybe Ms. Raichik isn't gay? I guess Joel Roth was correct when he said that a lot of times SI has used technicality spam enforcement as a way to solve a problem created by safety under enforcing their policies, which again isn't a problem per se, but it keeps us from addressing the root cause of the issue, which is that our safety policies need some attention. Yeah, I think they do. I really think they do. Now, there's plenty more, including the whole fiasco with Donald Trump and his presidential account, but I have to take a break first. Before I go, though, do you ever get to the end of the day just feeling kind of fuzzy-headed and not all there? I know I do. I put in some long days, and what I want is a way to regain focus so I can get the work done, but I don't like to drink coffee or cola drinks or take any energy drinks or anything like that, because there's a lot of sugar, a lot of caffeine. I get a buzz and then I get a crash. Well, Healthy Cells got you covered. Try their Focus and Recall. Boost your short-term focus and your long-term brain power with Healthy Cells Focus and Recall Vitamins. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. It's a vitamin supplement. It comes in a easy-to-use travel-ready gel pack. I keep them in my briefcase. I keep them by my desk. And whenever I get to the point where I'm just running out of gas, I take one of these, and within about 15 minutes, I am raring to go. And guess what? I don't get the jitters. I don't get palpitations. I don't get the caffeine buzz. And I don't get the sugar crash. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off your first order from Healthy Cell, including Focus and Recall or any of their products. All you have to do is use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. So again, go to HealthyCell.com, put your cart together with any of their great products, and then use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. Now, by doing so, you let them know that you're an America Out Loud listener. You help support the Constitution Study, and you get 25% off your first order. So check it out today. That's HealthyCell.com. Be sure to use the code OUTLOUD at checkout to get your 25% off your first order. And we'll be right back to more of the Twitter Files right after this break.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. The digital age is narrowing our attention span. Trouble concentrating or recalling information is frustrating, embarrassing, and kills productivity. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Focus and Recall to boost your brain power. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Focus and Recall is not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science backed ingredients to help you immediately sharpen focus, concentrate longer, and strengthen recall. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. Over 1,000 reviews with an average star rating of over 4.5 proves it works. Supercharge your brain and see the difference. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order, risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. That's HealthyCell.com. Code out loud.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
Spirit of American liberty and justice is woven into the soul of America Out Loud. Now we invite you, friends, to invest some of your time with our magnificent family of experts, their minds and voices. It's all back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study today. Well, we're taking another look at the rest of the Twitter files, right? We did the first bunch a few days ago. Now we're dealing with the latest releases. And we talked about the second dump, which came through Barry Weiss from the New York Times. The third part is actually another multi-part. This comes back to Matt Taibbi. And this has to deal with the removal of Donald Trump's account from Twitter. And it in itself is two parts. That's how big this thing is. The first half is being done, again, as I said, by Matt Taibbi. The second part, which I'll also get to, has been done by Michael Schellenberger. So let's take a look. Now, listen, love Trump, hate Trump, love what Twitter did, hate what Twitter did. My point Matt Taibbi wants to bring out is, and a look at the internal discussion, what happened inside of Twitter between January 6th and January 8th, it has not just a historical import, it has a political import. what happens when, does the president of the United States have a right to be heard on Twitter, or is Twitter still a private company? And if a company is intentionally hiding certain accounts because of political reasons, well, what does that say about people who trust Twitter to get information and make decisions such as, whose electors are you going to vote for president? Now, picking up with Mr. Taibbi and this segment, it appears what they're looking at are captures, recordings of Slack communication. Slack is an app that several companies and groups use to communicate back and forth. And to show that they understood what they were working on, one of the first posts that Taibbi points to is a question. Is this the first sitting head of state to ever be suspended? I want you to think about that for a second. Think of all the heads of state. Think of not just, the president, not just President of the United States or of Canada or of Mexico. Think of North Korea, Communist China, Iran. This is the first, this in the minds of Twitter is the most evil expression was what Donald Trump, and he's the one that had to be removed. But of course, there's actually more questions to that because in a later post, they state that their rules and policies say if it is clear that another account is being used for the purposes of evading a ban, it is also subject to suspension. For government accounts such as at POTUS and at White House, we will not suspend those accounts, but will take action to limit their use. However, these accounts will be transitioned over to the new administration in due course and will not be suspended by Twitter unless absolutely necessary to alleviate world harm. And again, Twitter is a private company. They have every right to determine who is and isn't on their platform. But what I learned from this is they're not worried about communists. They don't believe that oppression, slavery, starvation, lack of people, that's not world harm. But telling people to go demonstrate about problems during an American election, that is world harm. That cannot be allowed. Now, according to one Twitter executive, the call to remove Trump was made not based on what he said, but the context surrounding it. Actions by Trump and his supporters over the course of the election, and frankly, the last 4+ years. See, in the end, they took a broad picture, and apparently that picture is rather one-sided. See, according to Mr. Taibbi, while the bulk of the internal debate over Trump's ban took place between January 6th and January 8th, the framework, the logic behind it was laid for months. See, before January 6th, Twitter used a mix of automation, rules-based enforcement, and some more subjective moderation by their own internal people, including by senior executives. And we talked about that in the first segment. Now, based on these Slack discussions, as the election approached, senior executives, they were concerned. They were struggling on how to get the rules to do what they want them to do. Based on the first dump, this may be in part based on pressure from federal agencies like the FBI. But after January 6th, the Slack channel shows Twitter executives, they are intensifying their relationship with federal agents. They're enjoying it. In one case, health and safety head Joel Roth posted several messages to Slack that he was complaining that calendar transparency was making it difficult for them to come up with meeting names generic enough to cover who they were actually talking with. Well, for example, very boring business meeting that is definitely not about Trump. Or definitely not meeting with the FBI, I swear. So they understand that there's an issue with what they're doing that they want to keep concealed. See, according to a Slack channel on October 8th, 2020, a new Slack channel was opened, and they called it the U.S. 2020 XFN Enforcement. And the introduction says, starting tomorrow, October 9th, until November 15th, This channel will be used for the following reasons related to the U.S. 2020 elections. Trends identified that require scaled investigations, high-profile account escalations that potentially require PII soft interventions, scalable solutions required, and on and on. Basically, how was Twitter going to handle information on their platform related to the 2020 elections? Again, this is back in October. This is a month before the election. Now, this is also apparently during the time that executives were working with federal law enforcement, federal officials, intelligence agencies, trying in an attempt to moderate election-related content. See, this is the Twitter knowingly. So that's a very important word. They knowingly worked with the federal government to suppress information. And while, yes, they are a private company, there is apparently what looks like evidence that they conspired with federal law enforcement, federal intelligence agencies to deprive people of a right protected by the Constitution of the United States. It's a violation of 18 U.S.C. Section 241, conspiracy to deprive someone of a right protected by the constitutional laws of the United States. And in fact, one executive, Nick Pickles, says, well, maybe we should just call, can't we just say partnerships? For example, not sure we'd describe the FBI DHS as experts or some NGOs that aren't academic. They knew something, there was something here that needed to be hidden, and they're trying to figure out ways to do it. Well, for example, in one, it's a bot application, so I'm assuming this bot is reading some from some internal notes. And according to this, Mr. Roth made some notes where he said, hack materials exploded. We blocked the New York Post story. Then we unblocked it, but said the opposite. Then we said we unblocked it. And now we're in a messy situation where our policy is in shambles, comms is angry, reporters think we're idiots, and we're refactoring an exceedingly complex policy 18 days out from the election. In short, not sure what FML stands for, I don't know. But he also said that there was a weekly sync with FBI, DHS, DNI regarding election security. The meeting happened about 15 minutes after the aforementioned hack materials implosion. The government declined to share anything useful when asked. So here we have Yoler admitting that he had weekly meetings with FBI, DHS, Department of National, Director of the National Intelligence on the question of election integrity. And remember, this was the under the Trump administration where we have these agencies apparently working to subvert the Constitution, to keep you uninformed about things that are going on because, well, apparently they don't like it. As we saw with the Hunter Biden laptop, there was no evidence that it was hacked, but they used that hacked material at the instigation, if not preparation, of the FBI in order to deprive the American people of information they may find useful when they decide which electors for president they want to vote for. One example is FBI flagged two tweets that they wanted the Twitter to deal with. There was an editorial that said the Democrats are in complete panic as their massive voter push for vote by mail is backfiring on them. Two things are unfolding. First, an unexpected number of registered Republicans are returning ballots. Second, between 2 and 25% of ballots by mail are being rejected for errors. So this is, again, news. This is information, right? Well, guess what? Twitter decided that wasn't that there needed to be some enforcement. Why? Well, because a left-wing hack PolitiFact, I mean, let's face it. If you look at PolitiFact, they are definitely a progressively focused outlet. They said this story has been proven false. Why? Because PolitiFact said so. Really? He said, on the second note, well, it doesn't require any intervention because, well, it's normal for a 2% error rate in mail-in ballots. Well, yeah, he's right. 2% mail-in errors in mail-in ballots is kind of normal. It's twice in-person balloting, but it is normal. But not 25%. If up to 25% are being rejected because of errors, there's a problem. So what did Twitter's enforcement group do? they decide to slap a label on it saying, well, learn how voting is safe and secure. Why? Well, because it's totally normal to have a 2% error rate. Voila. And according to Matt Taibbi, they examined the entire election enforcement slack. They didn't find one reference to a moderation request from either the Trump campaign, the Trump White House, or even Republicans generally. They looked. They may be out there, but they couldn't find them. So next we switch to the next part, which comes from Michael Schellenberger. And he points to the first three parts that come out. And he starts with a public policy from Twitter. Twitter public policy on January 5th, 2018 says, blocking a world leader from Twitter or removing their controversial tweets would hide important information people should be able to see and debate. It would also not silence that leader, but it would certainly hamper necessary discussion around their words and actions. And guess what? I agree with that policy in general. I mean, unless the world leader is actually calling for criminal activity or something else, in general, we want to know what they're thinking. We want to know what they're saying, especially if we're being asked to decide whether or not they should continue to hold that position. However, after January 6th, internal CEO or internal Twitter documents seem to show that they're trying to find a way to change their policy. I mean, just look at it. Former First Lady Michelle Obama, tech journalist Kara Switzer, and others, many others, are publicly calling on Twitter to permanently ban Trump for what he said. Well, what most people say he said, what the news media says he said, not what he actually said. And what's interesting is most of it seems to be this hyperbolic rhetoric. Again, one person said that Jack Dorsey and Zuckerberg, well, they had blood on their hands. Chris Sacca said this, for failing to silence somebody, for failing to, or I should say, for allowing free speech. That's he says you got blood on your hands for allowing free speech. Or was it Michelle Obama said now is the time for Silicon Valley to stop enabling this behavior? Again, you mean like free speech? These are examples of people who want to shut down their opponents. They want to shut down. And again, could they give us an example of where Trump was inciting violence? Well, he told people to storm the Capitol. No, he said go down there and peacefully protest. Now, yeah, a lot of what Trump said was ridiculous and stupid. Right? Vice President Pence did not have the legal authority to tamper with the votes to decide which votes to count and which not to vote. I don't know who told him that. They were idiots. That wasn't the problem. And let's face it, how many times have we heard presidents say ridiculous things? I have a pen and a phone. You mean you're telling us you're going to violate your oath of office and the Constitution and start legislating from the White House? Or, you know, I believe the Patriot Act's unconstitutional, but I'm going to sign it and let the courts figure it out. Oh, in other words, you're going to be derelict in your duty to actually enforce the laws of the United States, including the Constitution, because you don't want to take responsibility for it. And that's just the beginning. But again, this was Trump. And let's face it, for 4 years, 5 years, media and social media and these very same actors have been out for Trump. They lied about the Russia hoax. They lied about the PP tape. They lied about the very good people. They're not talking about shutting those people down. So it seems partisan. Now, here's what's interesting. See, during this time frame, from January 4th to January 8th, Jack Dorsey, then CEO of Twitter, was on vacation. He's in French Polynesia. Hey, I hope you had a great time. But according to reports that he had delegated much of his handling of the current situation while he was gone, to the head of Global Trust and Safety, Joel Roth, and the head of Legal and Policy, A.V.J. Gadd. So they're the ones running the show while Mr. Dorsey was enjoying his vacation, meaning they were the center of this kerfuffle with inside of Twitter over January 6th. They were there when it happened. They were there dealing with the policies. They were the ones making the final decisions, apparently, in many of these situations. Now, there's a lot to unpack here, but I've got to take a break before I go. Before I do that, though, I want to remind you that, you know, the Constitution Study is one of many voices, not just talking about the Twitter files, but about all sorts of things. So I would recommend that you go to AmericaOutLoud.com every day to find the latest news and happenings. I get their news feed as part of my news feed. I have a little notification set up when things release. It's easy to do, and it's more important than ever. See, the great thing about the Twitter files is we're finally finding out the rest of the story. We're finding out the other part that was hidden. So the only way we remain with self-rule is if we, the people, know what's going on. And if we're going to wait for media or social media to do that, it's a fool's errand. It's not going to happen. So do your part. Share the stories, the articles, the podcasts, the videos. Do everything you can to let other people know what's going on. So do your part. Share what you can. Do all that we can so you can help all of us as we secure the blessings of liberty.
Cold and flu season is here. Wouldn't it be great if you had a way to minimize airborne viral threats? Well, now there is, and it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray called Cofix RX. You might even say it's just what the doctor ordered. To reduce your chance of getting hurt, you wear a safety belt when you're driving. To limit sun damage, you wear sunscreen on the beach. Cofix RX is just like that. It's an additional layer of protection. It's sold by thousands of pharmacists and medical doctors nationwide. It's made right here in the USA. Again, it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray. You've heard them talk about it here on the Out Loud Network over and over again. Check out CofixRx.com. That's CofixRx.com for a retailer near you, or use coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off at CofixRx.com.
You already know Genesis plus HOCL is your best defense against viruses. But did you also know it's the most powerful weapon for eliminating airborne mold, too? Customers are raving about the Genesis Fogger's ability to tackle mold problems and the bad smells that go with them. And we all know mold is a hazard to your health. There's no airborne invader that Genesis can't handle. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years, but our diet and the way we eat has, creating an environment in your mouth for bacteria to wreak havoc on your teeth and gums. For better oral health, get Spry Dental Defense, an oral care line designed to combat acid-creating bacteria. The toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and gum all contain xylitol, a natural ingredient shown to dramatically improve oral health. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural retailers.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. We're looking at some more of the Twitter files today. It's been kind of interesting. When we left, I pointed out that CEO Jack Dorsey was on vacation, and he had left Joel Roth and V.J. Gadd in charge pretty much while he was gone. Now, here's where things get a little interesting. See, if Mr. Roth is one of the people in charge, maybe we should get an idea of well, who this person is. Well, in fact, back in 2017, he was tweeting, I believe it was about one of the demonstrations at the Capitol. He said, yes, that person in the pink hat is clearly a bigger threat to your brand of feminism than actual Nazis in the White House. He believes that President Trump is a Nazi. Now, again, I don't see any evidence that he's provided for this, but we do see that on January 7th, right, the day after the January 6th, that apparently Jack Dorsey emailed employees saying that Twitter needed to remain consistent in its policies. that included the right of users to return after a temporary suspension. Roth doesn't seem so thrilled with that. He says, Jack's emails have been fine, but ultimately I think people want to hear from Vijaya or Dell or someone closer to the specifics of this who can reassure them that the people who care about this are thinking deeply about these problems and aren't happy with where we are. He said a little later that I think there's also an opportunity to help people understand that while it seems obvious and simple that we should permaban his account, I believe speaking of Trump, he said, we can't afford to take that immediate action without first playing the movie out and anticipating all the things that can happen, and then figure out the plans for those possible scenarios. So we see that, you know, Mr. Roth not only believes that Trump should be permabanned, he believes that many others at Twitter believe that it's obvious, it's simple to ban somebody for something they don't like, for someone who is a political adversary. Then later that day, Roth posts, guess what? Jack just approved repeat offender for civic integrity. Directional approach would be something like labels, which are severe enough to result in disabled engagements and incur strikes. Strike 1, label only. Strike 2, label only. Strike 3, label and 12-hour timeout. Strike 4, label and 7-day timeout. Strike 5, permanent suspension. Oh, he's excited that Jack has approved now that Trump is supposedly a repeat offender for civic integrity. Does anyone else hearing strains of 1984 in this as if Twitter is acting like they're part of the Ministry of Truth? Well, for example, one of the colleagues wanted to know if this decision means that Trump can finally be banned. They ask, does the incitement to violence aspect change that calculus? I have to remember, if you look at the video, Trump never incites people to violence. He specifically asks people to peacefully demonstrate, to peacefully petition those in Congress to look at the malfeasance that was going on. Apparently that doesn't matter if you work for Twitter. So on January 8th, Twitter permanently suspended Trump's account, in their words, due to the risk of further incitement of violence. Again, what did Trump do that incited violence? Compare that with the actions of, say, Sheila Jackson Lee or Maxine Waters that actually said, go out and disrupt, get in their face, don't let them have Pete. They weren't shut down. But you see, those two are Democrats. Trump is a Republican. And not only that, he is a Republican that, let's say, doesn't quite fit in the swamp in general terms. Now, in and amongst all this uproar, there seems to be just one concern about, a little thing like free speech. From one of the Slack channels, you read, this might be an unpopular opinion, but one-off ad hoc decisions like this don't appear rooted in policy and are, in my honest opinion, a slippery slope and reflect an alternate, equally dictatorial problem. This now appears to be a fiat by an online platform CEO with a global presence that can gatekeep speech for the entire world, which seems unsustainable. I want you to think about that for a second. In all of this melee, in all of this, you know, Trump is a Nazi, what are we going to do here? How do we ban him? How dare he still have this? You have one person saying, wait a second, isn't this kind of a slippery slope to a corporate hegemony? To the idea that one corporate CEO, based on their own personal opinions, can prevent information on our platform? Now, he's talking about world events, but I'm going to keep coming back to this because it's important. Twitter's a private platform. It's owned by Elon Musk, but then by the shareholders of Twitter. They have a right to control what's on their platform. But what you have here is a platform that's claiming to be a free speech platform that's showing more and more that at its executive level wasn't. And that executive level was used, that interaction, both the position of the executives and their working with the federal government was used to manipulate an election. Now, I'm sure that those at Twitter and others were quite happy with the outcome of the election. But to me, the outcome is much more serious. This reminds me of a scene from World War Z, where there's a situation, I believe it was in Israel, where they had a rule, if everybody agrees, there has to be one person that disagrees so that they can be debated. Well, here you have Twitter, where it appears everyone's agreed that, or the vast majority of the executives agree that Trump should be permanently suspended, and there's one person asking that question. Are we creating a problem for ourselves? Is it a slippery slope? Are we turning into a by fiat communication platform? Are we going to become the gatekeepers for speech for the entire world? Only one person was asking that question. I wonder what the answer was. Because based on what Michael Schellenberg is pointing out, is that it appears that the employees themselves have quite a bit of visibility into or control over the visibility of these tweets and these platforms. Now that kind of makes sense when we look at something from January 7th that one of the Slack communications was, can we or have we already discussed blocking the Stop the Steal hashtag? It's furthering fake news in a dangerous way from what I can tell. And Yul Ross says, we are proactively servicing that content for review under civic integrity, and it should be blocked from type ahead and trends. If you're seeing it in either of the latter, let me know as soon as possible. So, okay, they wanted to quiet down the Stop the Steal hashtag. Why? Because in the view of one employee, it was furthering fake news. But wait a second, Stop the Steal was a rally. It was a rally at the Capitol. It was a rally they were using as justification for finally banning Donald Trump, but now they want to shut it down so people don't see it. So it appears the answer to that question is damn free speech, full speed ahead. And as another example of the Trump derangement syndrome that seemed to have been quite common at Twitter, they wanted to start bouncing what they call tweets with screenshots of Trump's tweets. Now, here's the interesting thing. They said the problem is, well, many of these tweets were criticizing Trump, so they were hesitant to actually strike the users for criticizing Trump while they wanted to suppress anything that had anything to do with Trump, apparently to make it harder for people to find information. You see, they seem quite happy with shutting down, bouncing, de-amplifying, whatever the term they use, anything that was neutral or pro-Trump. But if it was anti-Trump, well, we don't want to restrict that. We want other people to hate Trump too. But you see, then something interesting came up. See, a sales exec asked Yul Roth if they're going to ban Trump even if his tweets fall under the public interest exceptions. See, Twitter policy at the time said even if content would normally be banned, it isn't going to be banned if it is directly contributes to understanding or discussion of a matter of public interest. Even their own rules didn't stop them. For example, there's another thread where Slack communication where Yul Roth seems to be trying to get Matt Gaetz banned as kind of a trial balloon to see if they could get away with it. They want him removed for conspiracy that incites violence. And he's apparently trying to talk Twitter's safety team into removing him based on this alleged conspiracy. Now, we're getting to the end here, so let me wrap this up, what we've seen here. And again, none of this is really a surprise to me. What we see here is Twitter's internal policy. What we see here is Twitter claiming publicly to be free speech, claiming not to de-emphasize, de-platform, shadow ban for political reasons, but we're seeing internal evidence that that is exactly what they were doing. It's interesting that, you know, so many people were railing against Jack Dorsey when we find that a lot of this January 6th stuff happened. Well, Jack was out of town. Well, he was not in the day-to-day operations. And it appears Joel Roth was doing a lot of this. And we also see Twitter basically saying, how do we get around our own policies in order to attack a person? And to me, that's very interesting. See, to me, that's what communist nations, that's what dictators do. We don't like this person, so we shut them down. Whether that person be Trump, Matt Gaetz, or anyone else. They don't like this, stop the steal. Let's, how do we shut that down? And I bring this up for one very important reason. As I've said twice already in this program, the Twitter, as a private company, has every right to control what is on their platform. Twitter is not the public square. It is a business that has opened itself to the public, but it's still a private business. However, if you're going there expecting to get free and fair information, if you're expecting it to be a free speech platform, well, then you're wrong. Their own internal documents show that Twitter is not a free speech platform, that it is a politically progressive communication platform. And if you go there, be aware of it. If you go to Twitter, you're entering a progressive meeting. It also means that if you are trusting Twitter to get the answer, right, left, or center, you're not going to get the answer. They've already decided that they will shut down speech to promote an agenda. That they will, as one person warned them, they wish to be the gatekeepers of information for the world. If they're willing to do that, what else are they willing to do? Why would you trust Twitter? Why would you trust an entity that has doesn't want you to hear all the stories, doesn't want you to hear the good, the bad, and the ugly? They want you to hear one side. They want to lead you to a decision. They want to influence what you see and what you know. Now, it's important to understand, this is not new. This has been going on, well, pretty much this entire country's entire existence. The very phrase yellow journalism came from newspapers manipulating what they reported in their papers based on their political preferences. The difference now is, because we have access to more information, these biases are exposed, which means we should understand you're going to see a bias wherever you go. I try very hard to minimize my biases in the impact of what I say here and what I present to you. I try hard. I can tell you it's not easy. But we're back to that very fundamental question. Who do you trust? Who do you get your information from? And do you filter what comes through there? Meaning, do you recognize their biases and act accordingly? So I'm not calling for Twitter to be shut down. I'm not calling for Twitter to be regulated. I'm happy that Twitter has been exposed as a biased source of information. That Twitter is not a free speech zone, that Twitter is not an open source of news, that they're biased. Think of it this way. Let me go back to that public square announcement, that public square analogy. Imagine you're walking the public square and you see two coffee houses. One has a donkey in the window. One has an elephant in the window, the symbols of political parties. When you walk in there, you know they're biased one way or the other. What happens when they you walk up to another coffee shop that has both the donkey and the elephant, but they do everything to do they can to shut the elephant down? That's what happens when you walk into Twitter. That's what happens when you share. Now, I still share information on Twitter because I'm hoping people there will find it and be exposed to the other side of the story. But there's a reason why I don't have Twitter in my newsfeed. There's a reason why I don't scroll through looking for answers. Because they haven't earned my trust. And if I've earned your trust, please let other people know that they can hear the Constitution Study every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. Can't listen live? All my podcasts, all my shows go to podcasts basically a day or two after they're heard on the radio. Find them on your favorite podcast app. If you can subscribe, rate my show, that would help tremendously. It helps other people find the Constitution Study. Now you can find all the links at AmericaOutLoud.com. But please share this information. Help other people to find out there is another side of the story and let them decide for themselves. See, by taking this information, by sharing it with friends, with family, on social media, anywhere you can, you become a worker. You become a soldier in the army as we work together to share the blessings of liberty in this tremendous country, from sea to shining sea, and for everyone of every race, color, and creed that calls this great country home.